with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And we encourage that phone call if you're calling from Carter, Craven, or Pamlico County, your local number, 247-7282, and from Onslow County, 353-4674. Cecil and Wes are with us today. Good morning, folks.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today, Cecil?
Well, Ben, I think today we're going to talk about a subject called secured transactions. There actually is a class, a course in law school that every lawyer takes called secured transactions. Mm-hmm. And of course, our listeners are immediately saying, what in the world are you talking about?
Yes.
So as we begin to demystify this subject, people will certainly be able to understand, and they will understand exactly what we're speaking about. Ben, there are two types, really. You begin with the conversation of secured transactions.
Mm-hmm.
There are those concerning real property, which, guess what, is a mortgage,
right.
A deed of trust.
Right. Okay.
That is a secured transaction. That is where the lender puts into place a lien, an opportunity to recover against the property and take it back if for some reason there's a default.
And the property itself becomes its security.
It does. And that, of course, is the one that all of us, you know, know about and hear about all the time. But the other category of secured transaction is a secured transaction having to do with personal property. And personal property, Ben, can be, you know, really anything down to, believe it or not, tables and chairs.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the most common personal property that, again, listeners are going to clue into is a car, an automobile, a boat. These are things that, as we know, when you borrow money and you set up a car payment,
right.
Guess what? You sign a security agreement that says that it is a secured transaction and that if you don't make your car payment, then the repossessor can come and repossess the car, sell it at auction in good faith, apply that to the debt, and, of course, go against you for the deficit.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about that some on the program.
Right, exactly.
About contractual rights of the creditor against the debtor relative to a deficit. Now, Ben, the car and the boat, 'cause we know a lot of people, don't we? A lot of friends that have car payments and boat payments, I guess.
Right, exactly.
That's a good thing. Those are again fairly straightforward. The one that I think people don't know a lot about that Wes and I are involved in very often is when a business sells.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it is it can be any business. I mean, it can be a cabinet making business. It can be any business.
Sure, right.
That has equipment.
Mm-hmm. Car repair with a lot of
car repairs, body shops. Mm-hmm. We've had a very active case in our office concerning a local body shop that did the security include the quote paint booth that was in that is a part of the body shop.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
a very significant, as we know, piece of equipment. What happens is that when the seller sells the business, many times the buyer, for whatever reason, just like in buying a piece of property, piece of land, or a car, they're unable to pay all cash. Now, we all know that a cash closing is the sweetest closing that a lawyer can see.
Right.
Because the seller gets all of their money. The buyer, you know, gets all of the property.
It's closed. Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, that just isn't the real world, is it, Ben?
No.
I mean, most people don't have that kind of cash sitting around. And so they have to come to terms. The buyer pays a down payment, some semblance of down payment for the business. And then, of course, sets up a promissory note that they are going to pay on a monthly or quarterly basis to the seller.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the seller then says to the lawyer, well, for heaven's sakes, you know, what am I going to do? I let go of my business. I sell my body shop, my cabinet making shop, my survey business, my physical therapy business, my dental practice.
Mm-hmm.
It can be any kind of business.
Right.
And I sell this on these terms, Cecil and Wes. And then a year or two goes by and the buyer drives the business under and doesn't make the payment.
Right.
And there I am with no business because I sold it.
Right.
And no payment. And this is where it is very important that the lawyer who represented the seller make sure that the transaction is secured and take back as collateral the equipment, the inventory, the accounts receivable, anything, the tools, anything and everything, the filing cabinets,
right,
the tables, the chairs, anything having to do with that business. A security agreement, just like we sign when we buy a car, just like we sign when we buy a house, basically saying that if the buyer defaults, then I, the seller, am able to come in. I have recourse. I'm able to take the business back. I'm able to take back all of the accoutrements of the business, all of the things that make that business work, tools and equipment, and hopefully build it back up again. This is not a good scenario for the seller, but it's better than just completely losing your shirt.
Now, if for example, if you bought a business, or if you let's take it from the seller side, if you are selling a business to somebody, but you're quote holding the paper, you're financing it yourself,
correct?
Is that also an example then of a secured loan? I mean, you're securing against the
That's exactly. Now, that's a perfect example.
Does the things like accounts receivable, is that part of it as well?
Absolutely.
Okay.
After acquired property is an important issue too, Ben. You know, sometimes you sell the business has got, you know, certain equipment, certain inventory, accounts receivable. It depends on the language in our security agreement in our governing documents. Of course, Cecil and I have to make sure that if we're representing the seller that we're trying to cover just as much as we possibly can because we want to make the situation easy for the seller in the event of a default by the buyer. Basically, a fluid transition to be able to go in and take the property back and hopefully either, you know, reestablish or resell the business. Yeah. So sometimes, you know, we're dealing with the business and, you know, it might be years later and maybe some of the equipment that we had or the inventory is antiquated. Maybe it's old. So we can have an after acquired property clause in our security agreement that allows us to cover other things, the new computers, the new, you know, software, the new furniture, the new, you know, whatever it might be so that, we have, a strong security interest with value so that we can get back what's still owed, you know, on the note.
So again, to kind of take your body shop one, if they acquired a particular, piece of equipment after the original sale, then that might be possibly taken back.
Depending on the language in the governing documents.
Right.
Exactly.
Wow. It always does. That's
right. But okay. So the alternative would be if we did not execute a secured transaction, but just a mere contract and with a promissory note. Okay. So we've sold the business. The buyer doesn't have enough funds to pay the full purchase price. So we're taking a note back. And the note is for, it could be for, you know, $50,000, $100,000, $10,000. I mean, it depends on the circumstances.
Yeah.
So if it's not a secured transaction and we don't have the right to go back and take collateral, whether it's real property or whether it's, you know, the computers or whatever it ends up being, then what remedy does that seller then have in the event of default by the buyer to sue on the note?
Right.
That's it.
Okay.
Okay. So then you have to go through the process of filing a lawsuit. Okay. You have to win the lawsuit, which you probably will if you have good documents. You get your judgment on the promissory note, and then you have the big question about being able to collect.
Yes, right.
Because you've got a buyer who could not keep the ship afloat with regard to the purchase, but now you have a judgment against them for this full amount, so you can execute on the judgment to try to get payment. But if they don't have the assets to pay, you know, you're left holding the bag.
Now, could some of those assets to pay be the business? I mean, go back and kind of like you were
If it's secure.
If it's still around.
If
the computers aren't sold.
See, that's what I'm going to say. Sometime in that lawsuit, they could be selling all the stuff.
That's right.
No, you can't. you can't change those facts in terms of, you know, the business being driven in the ground to the point that the equipment is no longer even there.
Right.
You know, but it is just critically important that all of this get analyzed on the front end. It's astonishing to us how many folks sell their businesses on a hope and a prayer. And sometimes it's just because there's not but so much market for their business.
Right.
Possibly. And they feel that this is, you know, an out. It can be secured in a fairly easy way. We're going to talk more about this in a minute, Ben.
All right. As we come back here, remember you can go online at harvellandcollins.com and listen to past shows and call them too at 252-726-9050. More on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins after this. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. We're talking about secured transactions here today with Cecil and Wes.
We are. Ben, you know, scenario is that, you know, I have a friend, client that, that sold a, you know, quite a large business and, in Raleigh and retired here to Morehead City, you know, and he and his wife were all settled in their retirement. And then unfortunately the buyer of the business, you know, young guy in his 40s, early 50s, you know, had cancer and died, which is tragic.
Yeah.
But as a result of that key player no longer being available, the business began to falter.
Mm-hmm.
And the payments couldn't be made. And these folks had to leave Morehead City, move back to Raleigh, buy a little place, a little condo there, take back over the business, kind of clean up places that had not, that had gotten kind of left behind during his illness, and build the business back up, and they're going to have to sell it again. Now, what's critical about that is that fortunately they had good lawyering and they had good documentation and they were able to go back into that business without having to go hire the West Collins of the world, the litigators, and litigate contracts. They could go in without notice, without recourse, you know, as long as their actions were reasonable, all of which were. They were able to do all of this without a lot of court involvement or litigation. And this saved, you know, probably tens of thousands of dollars, not to mention the fact that rather than having to be all wrapped up with lawyers,
right,
and tens of thousands of dollars later, they were able to put those energies toward, you know, as I say, cleaning up the business and then, of course, building it back up to be able to resell it.
And sometimes when we see those signs that show up outside of a business saying under new management, it's actually the old management.
Do you know the one thing that didn't get talked about and could have been talked about in that scenario that I just said? Is what if my friends had required to own a life insurance policy on this key man?
Right.
What if they had? They required as part of the closing that he secure a life insurance policy and name them as beneficiary for purposes of paying off that note. Now, that would have been very nice. And that happens, Ben.
Yes.
And that's something that, you know, good lawyers should think about.
Would that be in addition to also holding the security?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a type of security.
Right. These are questions I know that as we said we think about it with a mortgage, but they come up with a lot of people that have small businesses, and
they do.
One of the reasons why they need to protect those small businesses.
Right. Another tool in the toolbox is to require the buyer to, yes, it's secured as to the equipment, the inventory, the files, the tables, the chairs. But by the way, this is such a transaction where you're going to owe me $100,000, $200,000 that I also want to have a deed of trust on some property, some real property. I want something really tangible that I can put my hands on if for some reason you drive this business under. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we'll see that's called cross collateralization,
mm-hmm.
where the transaction is collateralized in more than just the base, just the origin of the business assets. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some cross collateralization, such as this life insurance policy,
mm-hmm.
such as a security instrument in a paid for piece of land.
Can you secure a business transaction? I'm thinking of a couple of examples without having real property. I mean, I have a gentleman, for example, I met this past weekend who has a consulting business, and he has a lot of accounts. I mean, he has a lot of accounts, but he wants to retire. I mean, can he sell that business and secure that?
Just with the accounts, yeah, I mean, you can, but there's risk there because, you know, we don't know at the time of default what accounts are still going to be in existence.
Right.
You know,
well, they stay.
Yeah.
Right.
So when we're talking about secured transactions, yeah, you can talk about accounts and those type things, but you really are looking more toward things that are tangible, such mm-hmm. as, you know, the furniture and
right.
The things that make the business go
mm-hmm.
From a tangible standpoint, and also real estate. You know, we've been talking about this from a seller's perspective a little bit more than from a buyer's perspective.
Right.
We've been talking about protecting the seller in the event the buyer can't come up with the cash
mm-hmm.
to pay the full purchase price, which is always what we want to see, by the way. We want to see the buyer to go, you know, if you don't have the cash, let's go get a loan
yes.
and go ahead and pay
get
the seller
financing.
Off. Let's make it super right. clean as far as that goes. And then we just have a closing. Money changes hands. You get the business and everything else that goes along with it. And we all, you know, sail off into the sunset.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're talking about the buyer side of this, there's really a caveat emptor element here, a buyer beware element.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're dealing with a secure transaction, you bought a business, or even you bought a piece of real estate under what's called a purchase money transaction, meaning the seller is financed part of it.
Uh-huh.
In the event that you're in default, just by a very small amount, I mean, let's say that your first payment was due on the 5th and you're 5 days late on the 10th.
Right.
Well, the buyer or the seller doesn't have to necessarily take your payment at that point in time.
Mm.
Let's say you put $50,000 down on this $300,000 piece of property. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the seller at that point in time could pull the trigger on the note and foreclose on the property and take the property back and keep your $50,000.
Right.
So when you're in a situation where you're the buyer
mm-hmm.
and you are in a secure transaction where that buyer does have a deed of trust on your property or has a security interest on your stuff, your things that go with the business, it is well advised for the buyer to not end up in default. Keep up with your payments because, you know, usually buyers and sellers are going to work together,
mm-hmm.
but they don't have to. The seller could pull the trigger in the event of a very short-term default, and there could be dire consequences for the buyer.
You could have you get locked out in a day. I mean, you just have the locks changed and you're out of there.
That's right.
Right.
And you could be in a situation where, you know, you lose
mm-hmm.
that down payment.
That's right.
I mean, you bought a piece of property, you put $50,000 down for it, there's a foreclosure, let's say the buyer is the highest bidder, or the seller is the highest bidder, he takes the property back, but mm-hmm. he's going to keep the deposit.
Mm.
So, you know,
that's
a pitfall.
This is where you need the advice. I mean, this is where legal advice is.
That's right.
Is,
now,
important.
When that circumstance occurs, and it doesn't occur that often, but the buyer does have one remedy there in the event that they're in default.
Okay, we'll get yep. to that remedy yep. in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, and you can join us as well with your questions, and also you can go online and find out more information too. Listen to past shows at harvellandcollins.com and call for that appointment to meet Cecil West at 252-726-9050. Hey, welcome back here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, and we were talking about remedies right there in a secured transaction for
right,
a buyer.
We were talking about, you know, the buyer beware situation in the secured transaction, especially in the real estate context.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the event the buyer is in default, the seller can certainly pull the trigger on the foreclosure on the deed of trust to take the property back. putting the buyer in a position where he or she could, you know, potentially lose their down payment, mm-hmm. you know, summarily right away. It's gone. But in the event that that is taking place, then the buyer does have what's called the right of equity of redemption.
Hmm.
And basically that means that instead of losing that $50,000 down payment, they can go ahead and try to come up with the funds to pay off the entire indebtedness.
Oh,
that
right.
stops the foreclosure. And we have, you know, I've represented sellers in situations like that before where we have, you know, maybe a pretty fresh transaction that just took place.
Mm-hmm.
One comes to mind, out of Jones County, actually, where there was, you know, the seller ended up selling a piece of property, taking back a note. There was a down payment of, I think, $100,000 mm-hmm. or so. Purchase price, I think, was $400,000 or $500,000. And there was a default within the first 4 or 5 months. Attempt by the seller to contact the buyer, and the buyer just would not respond.
Hmm.
But he was, you know, in default. So since the buyer wouldn't respond, we began foreclosure proceedings, and then the buyer does what, or the buyer then wants to pay it. He
right.
wants to say, I want to catch up.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
You know?
Right. Uh-huh.
But my client made the decision to proceed and didn't feel as though it was fair to him to enter this transaction, and then this buyer just kind of string him along by not making payments. He didn't have any confidence that he would continue to make payments on time.
Right, right.
So we forced the issue on that, and the buyer ended up having to go find the money to pay off the entire loan as opposed to losing his down payment because
right.
and the property because of a foreclosure.
And at that point, the buyer could be looking for a white knight to come in and go into the business with him, right?
So the buyer beware part of this is – buyers out there in secure transactions, keep up with your payments.
There you
Don't
go.
Get behind, because there are lots of remedies that the seller has against you that are pretty strong.
And if you want to find out more, you want to engage the folks at Harvell and Collins by calling them at 252-726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City. Again, 252-726-9050.